Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about Braille. Braille writers, Braille printers, Braille translation, Braille transcription, refreshable Braille displays, pretty much everything we could think about that was relevant to Braille. But turning first to our tip of the week, this week's tip is that you can get books that are made in print and Braille, all in the same book, that you can read to your children and grandchildren. We discovered the National Braille Press made these books for children when our kids were young. And when they were first born, we started investing in all sorts of kiddie lit so that I could read books to the kids, because it's a really nice experience to share a book with a child. And after a while, Pete got jealous because I got to read all the bedtime stories.
So through the National Braille Press, we joined their children's book club, and every month they would come out with a new children's book that I was able to read to the kids. And the way they did this was they took the original print book and they tore apart the bindings, and then they would print up clear plastic Braille pages to interleave between the print pages, and then they would rebind the book up to make it look like a regular book. So this way, the sighted person, in this case our kids, could see through the clear Braille pages, and they could read the text as I was reading the text in Braille, and they could see the pictures. And the other thing that was kind of interesting was also on these clear Braille pages, they often had a description of the pictures. So I was able to either tell the kids about the pictures or vice versa, and I could verify that way.
And then the other thing they would do is they would sell these books at the exact same cover price as they would cost in print only in a regular store.
That was one of the really neat things about this program. They generally had the publishers donate the books so that even though Braille is pretty expensive to produce and the labor costs involved were probably kind of high, they were able to do this through this process of having the publishers donate the books, and I'm sure they had some other grants to help out the process also. So even though the kids are grown up now, we still have a whole shelf of these things, all different kinds. A big book of Mother Goose rhymes, The Cat in the Hat, as Nancy said. One other interesting thing was on the clear Braille pages, every once in a while, not very often, they would Braille up an outline picture of what the print picture was about. And the one I remember most was Arthur's nose. Arthur was an aardvark.
With a very long, pointy nose that he didn't like.
And he wanted a new nose to look like everybody else. And in the back of the book, they have pictures of all of the choices of different shapes of noses so the blind person could actually feel these shapes. And they're really kind of funny. It was a very nice thing to do.
One other experience that we had with these books that always sticks in my mind, and this was 20 years ago, our daughter was in a DAISY troop, which is kindergarteners. We go in and talk to groups of school children pretty often about what's it like getting through life when you can't see and you're missing one of your senses. We always bring in a print Braille book, and Pete reads a couple of sentences from it. Well, this particular group of kindergartners, it was, you know, only about a dozen of them. There were a bunch of grown-ups. We turned out the lights, and Pete started to read from this book, and all of a sudden, one of these little girls figured it out. And she said, "You're reading without seeing. It's dark here."
You know, that reminds me of when I was younger and I would travel with either my sister or some of my cousins, and we'd be on a long car ride, and it would be getting dark at night. And who was the person who could read to them? It was me.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about Braille printers that range from those that make one dot at a time to those that print entire pages or books at a time. So if Pete's at home and he wants to write himself a note, he takes out the slate and stylus that he keeps in his desk and a file card because it's nice and stiff.
And this is the way that blind people write Braille by hand. So a slate and stylus consists of two components. One is the slate, which is a metal device that holds the paper, and imprinted into this metal piece are holes representing each possible position for a dot. So there's a little depression. Now, when you clamp the paper into the slate, the stylus part is like a little awl or like a dull pin that you push in the appropriate positions to bulge out the paper into a little dot in the places that you want to make the character.
Well, and then the backside of the stylus that's behind the paper has a little indent that's lined up with every hole in the front of the slate, so that if he pushes his stylus through the hole in the front, it pushes on the paper, but only until it's at the bottom of that little depression on the bottom.
It's very manually intensive and can be quite tiring on your wrist. So I usually use this for short things. Like Nancy said, I have a slate that's in the shape of an index card, and I'll use that to write little notes if I'm giving a presentation or phone numbers or just quick little things that I'll want to jot down. So I have my slate and stylus here. Clamping in the piece of paper. And now I'm going to write V I E W P O I N T S. Viewpoints. Done. Open it up and read it. Viewpoints. The interesting thing about using the slate and stylus is because you're punching out the Braille characters from the back of the paper and making a depression, but you really read the high bumps, you have to write everything in reverse. So not only do you write all the letters reversed, but you write from right to left instead of left to right as you're printing out the Braille across the page.
So the next step up from that is a Dymotape labeler that's been modified to print Braille. So if you're familiar with the Dymotape stuff, like from the 1950s, it's been around for a long time. It's this plastic tape, and if you peel off the backing, then it'll be self-stick. We all used to use this to make labels for things, and you just have this labeler that if you dialed in whatever letter you wanted and you squeezed, you'd get a raised A or a raised B. Well, guess what? That's ideally suited to Braille, and you'd get a raised A in Braille or a raised B in Braille, and that's very convenient. But we don't use it that much, so Pete also has a specific slate that's designed for the Dymo tape, and so he can just slip the plastic tape into that, and the same as with the regular slate and stylus on the stiff paper, make Braille labels.
Yes, many of the slates have an extra slot in it for putting in a roll of Dymo tape or some thin little piece of paper like that.
And that's really handy. We have every single CD and LP. All our music is labeled in Braille.
Well, and that's also handy. We labeled the buttons on the microwave and the dishwasher that way. So we use it for other things also. That's quite handy. So you can either use that Dymo labeler or an ordinary slate and stylus for that task.
So the next step up is a Braille writer, and this is a special Braille typewriter. It's got six keys, one for each of the six dots.
Plus the space bar.
And we went on YouTube and found a nice little demonstration of this from somebody named Jimmy Kong of King Kong Studios. So thank you for putting that up there, and we excerpted this from that.
This is your standard Perkins with your standard six-key input.
Let's put this piece of paper in the bad boy here.
So now let's roll this paper up, and here's your equipment checklist. Lock your paper, tear it to the left, and we use these six dots to create words, numbers, and letters in the Braille code.
So if you have one of those, that's convenient for writing. It's a lot more convenient than, as you could see, doing a dot at a time.
A lot less wearing on the hands.
Oh, that's for sure. And it keeps things all nicely lined up, and it'll work on full-size paper.
And quicker.
a lot quicker. And if you're even less patient, you can get a much more expensive device called a Braille printer. We had one by Everest, but it broke.
I managed to squeeze out one piece of paper through the thing so you can see how this thing works. Basically, the Everest printer prints a line of Braille at a time, and it's very noisy, but it's very easy to print Braille. You hook it up to a computer, maybe through a parallel port or a serial port, and you just print your document that way like you would to a normal printer. So here's a demonstration of the Everest printer and me trying to get it started and getting a little frustrated. Turning on the Everest Braille printer.
And so on for about 45 seconds.
Well, there it was, falling apart at the end. It just wasn't going to feed another piece of paper. So,
but it sure would have been handy to do a page in 45 seconds. And actually, it does the front and the back at the same time because it puts the dents in between the bumps. And so although it's visually very confusing, you only feel the bumps. And so you can have a two-sided Braille page. Like
right.
That.
If you're looking for a Braille printer, that kind of printer that prints on both sides is called an interpoint printer because they intersperse the dots from one side with the dots on the other side so they don't crush. And just to give you an idea of the cost of some of these things, so a slate and stylus will cost a few dollars. So that's a relatively inexpensive option for creating Braille. It's pretty easy. Braille writer, which we demonstrated, could run $700 or $800, and something like the Everest may be $2,000, $3,000, $4,000.
And if you're really feeling flush, you can get a modified lithographic printer like the professional organizations like the National Braille Press and others have, and they do high volume printing. And I have no idea what those cost, but it's a good bet it's more than our house.
Not for home use.
Unless you have a really big house. This week's focus topic will be about doing Braille translation and transcription. Let's just start with a little bit of statistics. According to a 2007 annual report from the American Printing House for the Blind, there are approximately 58,000 legally blind children in the United States. Out of those school-age children, only about 10% of them use Braille as their primary reading material. And, you know, you can see why that would happen, because these days there's so much available in audio and there are screen readers and other things available. But Braille, if you want to do hands-on, do it yourself, read to yourself, Braille's your option if you can't read print.
Right. When I was younger, they didn't mainstream blind children in the public schools. So many blind people went to a special school for the blind, and there they were taught all these Braille and mobility skills as part of the school program. So I would guess that's also probably part of the reason why not as many children know Braille these days.
So Braille comes in several varieties. Grade 1 Braille is kind of the basic that you would expect to see if you didn't know that there were other varieties. And it's just a direct substitution, character for character. So an A is an A, a B is a B, a C is a C, etc.
That's what we learned in first grade. Make it simple.
But Braille's pretty bulky. And so they've come up with grade 2, which includes a standardized set of contractions, and there's lots of contractions.
So there might be different contractions for common letter combinations like THE, the. There's a single character that represents that. Or sometimes you see DD in the middle of a word. There's a special character for that. Some of it can be context sensitive. So something like the symbol for DD, if it's in the middle of a word, it will be DD. If it's at the end of a word, it represents a period. If it's at the beginning of a word, it represents DIS. So Braille can be a little bit tricky, and that's why they don't teach you grade 2 in first grade.
And then there's grade three, which is kind of a do-it-yourself kind of thing. You can take the standard abbreviations, but if you happen to use certain words very frequently, you're at liberty to make up your own abbreviations, and they would consider that grade three. But that's not really for public usage.
And it's almost like writing shorthand for special things.
And then there's various types of Braille, you know. We've been talking about the kind of Braille that you would use for writing a paragraph. There's literary Braille, there's Braille for math, there's computer Braille, there's Braille music.
Yeah, so there are a lot of similarities between these. If you look at the literary Braille, this is used in prose, you know, if you're reading a magazine or a book, just the common type of things you would read. But you can imagine Braille math would be a little bit tricky because the Braille usually happens on one line in sort of a linear fashion, whereas in print, mathematics can be in a two-dimensional format. So it becomes a little bit tricky to do some Braille math. So they've developed some special codes and methods for doing that. And then there's also computer Braille. Since the advent of refreshable Braille displays, they decided that instead of using just six dots to represent any character, they could put two more dots down the bottom and give the blind person a little bit more feedback. So one of the dots may represent, if it's on, it represents that the letter is capitalized or not. Or sometimes they will use the bottom dots to indicate special things like highlighting or underlining, things like that. So computer Braille is yet a little different.
And then Braille music?
Oh, I learned a little bit of that in second grade. But again, that's tricky because, again, music is, like mathematics, written kind of two-dimensionally in print because it's a staff line and notes are on top of each other and below each other. And again, Braille being primarily kind of a linear format, you know, straight across the line, they have to do some interesting things to represent intervals between notes and keep it all on one line.
And all of this is one reason why it's so hard to be a good Braille transcriber. In preparation for this show, I managed to find the National Library Service from the Library of Congress. They have their training manual available on the web as a PDF file. The thing's over 150 pages long, and that does not include all of the appendices, which have the lists of abbreviations and special symbols and all of that.
There are lots and lots of rules, and transcribers, or people who take print and put it into a Braille format, have to learn all these rules because just one dot out of place can make a big difference in the meaning of a word or what the Braille is trying to convey. So they have to be very carefully trained and then tested to make sure that their Braille skills and their knowledge of the rules are in very good condition. So you can imagine with all of these rules that there has to be some standardization. And there is an organization that does collect information and specifications and agreements from around the world on these specifications.
And that's the Braille Authority of North America. And their website is BrailleAuthority, all one word, .org. They refer to themselves as BANA, or B-A-N-A, short for Braille Authority of North America. And from their website, it says their mission is to assure literacy for tactile readers through standardization of Braille and/or tactile graphics. BANA's purpose is to promote and to facilitate the use, teaching, and production of Braille. It publishes rules, interprets, and renders opinions pertaining to Braille in all existing and future codes. It deals with codes now in existence or to be developed in the future in collaboration with other countries using English Braille. In exercising its function and authority, BANA considers the effects of its decisions on other existing Braille codes and formats, the ease of production by various methods, and acceptability to readers.
And as with any other specification, these things do change through the years. So I've seen changes since I learned Braille in how some of the contractions are used, which contractions to use, in what context. And I think even the past few years, they had a major upgrade to the specifications in Braille. And these are now being implemented in many of the screen readers and transcription rules.
And of course, as you can imagine, with the advent of computers, there are a number of computerized transcription services, if you will. So you take a text document, you run it through one of these things and Braille comes out the other side.
Yeah, there are a couple of those. Some of the more popular ones that I'm familiar with are Duxbury. They write software that you can run on your PC to do this Braille translation. There is another one called Megadots, which is very highly used. Those are the major commercial ones. There are a couple of free ones also that are somewhat usable, not quite as sophisticated. There's one from NFB, the National Federation for the Blind, called NFB Trans. And I think there's another one called WinBraille. So if you Google those on the web, you can find some of these free translators.
And then another free one called Polkadot, which I just thought was such a cute name.
That was cute.
P-O-K-A-D-O-T, Polkadot, which they say is a six-key direct keyboard input Braille transcription program that a sighted Braille transcriber can use. And you can download that for free if you want to try it out. If you're looking for somebody else to transcribe something for you, you can go to the National Library Service website or call them at 800-424-8567. Their website is www.loc.gov/NLS for National Library Service. And they have a directory available in print and Braille format with names of groups and individuals who do transcription around the country. Or you can go to the National Federation of the Blind's website at www.nfb.org/nfb/Braille_transcription. And they've got a even longer list. Of course, the first item on their list is the National Library Service, which we just talked about. And then they have it further divided into firms doing essentially all mass production of press Braille for long runs, if you want to print a owner's manual for something. Those doing short run on-demand Braille transcription, and a few organizations that have the facility to do both.
There's a great Wikipedia article on Braille if you want to know more about Braille and the various kinds of Braille.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
Now for this week's high-tech item, various types of refreshable Braille displays. So all the Braille we've been talking about up until now has been static. In fact, it's all been on paper or plastic or, you know, the signs you see in public buildings where they emboss it in metal, but it's all been static. And sometimes there's a reason why you might want to have a Braille display that changes every few seconds. In fact, Pete's sitting here with one now.
Well, I use a refreshable Braille display for my program notes as we're doing Viewpoints. But this was actually one of the neat inventions that happened in the early 80s as technology improved. The first Braille, refreshable Braille display was made in the early 80s and had about, I think, 20 characters on the display. And basically, the way these are made are they have little piezoelectric coiled crystals that when you apply a current, these things pop up and down. So they could make Braille lines as you were, say, reading your computer or reading a document or something like that. The drawback with this technology, I mean, these days you can get displays that are 40 and 80 characters wide, one line of Braille. They're very expensive. I mean, each character can be, $30 or $40, and by the time you put a whole display together with the electronics and everything else, these 40-cell displays may cost $3,000 or $4,000, and the 80-cell displays may cost double that. So it is an expensive technology, but I like to use a Braille display when I'm programming computers. So I always had Braille displays hooked up to my computers at work. You wouldn't want to print out every page that I looked at and create all that paper to fill up my office. Things like this PacMate display has a refreshable Braille display on it. It's a little PDA with Braille, and you can just haul that around. It has a Microsoft mobile operating system on it and does mini versions of many of the Office applications, so I can access many of those applications on this device. It has a speech synthesizer built in if you don't want to use the Braille, but if you do like using the Braille, or in this case, doing Viewpoints, I don't want my notes to be audible to everybody else. I just turn off the speech and use the Braille. So refreshable Brailles have a lot of different uses, although they are a little bit pricey.
And the main manufacturers of these would be Humanware, which is all one word, Humanware, or Freedom Scientific, and they both make very nice devices, either standalone displays or displays that are built into PDAs.
Right, and there are many other manufacturers. If you do a search in Google again for Braille displays, but I have a lot of confidence in those two companies. I've dealt with them in the past, but there are certainly other options around the world and different options open to you.
So we learned a lot in preparing for this show, and I don't even know what I was looking for, but I found some information on something called a Nokia Braille reader, which Nokia is starting to make available on some of their regularly available cell phones. And we excerpted part of a clip that was available with somebody from Nokia on YouTube demonstrating this. He's Swedish, but his English is really good.
Hello, I'm Roope Takala from Nokia. I'm here to introduce to you the Nokia Braille Reader application. The application allows blind people to read text messages on their mobile phones. This is how it works. I open the Nokia Braille application, just like any application. The Nokia Braille Reader reacts to an incoming text message, and the software main menu opens automatically. Now I just need to put my finger on the read area of the menu, and the message is read to me letter by letter in Braille. The vibrating motor in the phone reads out the Braille character dot by dot. You feel a sharp pulse when the dot is raised and a soft one when the dot is not raised. You can always pause the reading of the message by lifting your finger from the phone screen. I can return back to the main menu by tapping the back area at the bottom of the screen. This application has been developed together with Nokia, Tampere University, and the Finnish Federation of the Visually Impaired. The Nokia Braille Reader application is downloadable from the Nokia Beta Lab free of charge.
Boy, I'd like to get my hands on one of those and check it out. I haven't seen that in person. That sounds pretty neat.
Oh, yeah. How cool is that? Wouldn't that be neat to be able to read your own text messages just like everybody else does? So that's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we're calling our theme Dating and Beyond. We're interviewing a couple of where they're both blind, and of course telling some more of our own dating stories, talking about dating in the 2000s and how you might do that with some of the online dating services. And then, you know, if the dating goes well enough, a couple will be tempted to set up house together. And so we talk about some of these more mundane chores that you end up doing and special approaches you might take if you're visually impaired to cleaning the house, doing yard work, paying the bills, and all sorts of less romantic stuff. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.